Good evening. I'd like to start with something that the great 18th century Japanese haiku poet Basho said, and it was his advice to young poets. And he said, "Learn about the pines from the pines. Learn about bamboo from bamboo." I think this is what we've been doing over the past number of days. So it's interesting because he didn't say, go read about the pines. Go study about bamboo. He's saying, learn about the pines from the pines. There's a kind of direct contact in that. A direct knowing. And this is what we've been doing with ourselves, with our human experience, without all of the normal distractions, the busyness, the cell phones, the computers. Taking all that away, we've sat here for days, just being moment to moment with our direct experience. And I'm imagining that you've learned some things. In fact, I don't even have to imagine because, of course, I've been meeting with a lot of you, and so I've been hearing about what you've been learning. And this kind of first-person experiential learning is, it's yours. Nobody gave it to you, and nobody can take it away. We tend to live in a world of concepts and ideas about things, about the things around us, the people around us, and about ourselves. We live in kind of a virtual reality, if you will, through which we're perceiving, or in which we're perceiving. So concepts are great, they're useful, yeah. They help us orient. Without the conceptual mind, there wouldn't be this building. This was existed in somebody's imagination before it was created. But one of the places that we're, one of the ways in which we're limited by concepts is that we tend to name things and then think we know them. That's a bell. You do that with people. Oh, I know you, you're so-and-so. I know about you. And you can experience this directly in this moment. Just experience the bare perceiving that's happening with seeing. As you're looking around. And of course you can label, you see cushions, you see chairs, you see people, you might even know some people's names. Yeah. At At the same time, there's this level of bare knowing, yeah? Just the seeing itself that can penetrate through the conceptual layer. We can actually see what's in front of us. So we've been doing this with our bodies, feeling the breath. Oh, that's my breath. That's where we usually stop. I breathe. I'm pretty good at it. Been doing it all my life. In and out, in and out. So, but we're not stopping there. We're actually experiencing the direct experience of breathing. And it's amazing, isn't it? So nuanced, changing all the time. Never the same. We're doing this with feelings in the body. Yeah. My shoulder hurts. You know, pain, that's a concept. We're going beneath that and experiencing, well, what is this thing we're calling pain? Yeah, the bare, we find it's so multifaceted. And we're doing this with emotions. Really feeling our emotions. How often do we do that? Taking the time and the space to feel what we're actually feeling. To become intimate with ourselves. And I'm sure you've discovered over these days, you know, you've been through such a range of experiences, ups and downs, joys and sorrows, triumphs, disasters, all of you. Today, we expanded the instructions and we've been, and this has been happening all week, but specifically we talked about thought. Yeah. We're actually turning our attention to thoughts as they arise. That's a pretty unusual thing to do. Usually we just, we think our thoughts, and they're kind of like running us around. We just believe them. It's almost like they're back here somewhere, and they're driving. You know, it's like I'm not driving, but there's these thoughts that are driving me around. It feels like that sometimes, right? Yeah. So interesting to kind of like, almost like we're dropping back and there's this opening and then, wow, there's this whole arena of stuff happening. And it's not just stuff, it's the stuff that makes my reality. It's the stuff that determines who I think I am. It's the stuff that determines who I think you are. And who's running the show anyway? And who's writing this content? I don't know about your case, but the writers aren't very good in mine. I wouldn't watch this. You know? That was actually my first retreat I sat. I kind of got depressed. After a few days, I was like, this is what my mind is doing? I was so interested to go on the retreat and find out what's really going on here. I was like, oh my God. Dad? So petty, you know, all the time, all day. Like, who's looking at me and what are they doing? It's like, just horrible. So I got feeling down, you know, I was like, oh, maybe I'm not as cool as I thought I was. Seemed like bad news, you know, meditation, you get bad news. I remember I went into an interview, my second meditation retreat, and I told the teacher this. I was like, you know, I'm into this meditation stuff and all, but it's kind of depressing because, you know, I saw myself and it wasn't that cool. And he said, oh. He said, that's just one part of your mind looking at another. Yep. I was like, oh, that flipped something around. There's this other part of my mind. I hadn't seen that part. That was kind of driving the show, you know? Oh. And it just got more and more interesting from there. So, I have a little script here. I wrote a bunch of things down, but I've not been following it. Like, do I follow it or do I keep talking? Let's see what I do. I'm not sure. Let's see if the content's any good. Not too good. Who wrote this? I looked at it and I saw, like, Oracle of Delphi. And I was like, oh. Maybe we should... So somebody asked me in one of the interviews, like, oh, this meditation stuff is kind of self-centered, you know, because I'm focusing on myself all the time. And just, you know, how is focusing on myself going to get me beyond myself? Because myself is so small and narrow and petty and you know, competitive and ambitious and is trying to do this all, you know. So, like, what's the point of focusing on that? And I think that's a really good question, you know. What is the point? So, you know, seeing this stuff, yeah, seeing this show, you know, the whole thing, how it's being created, all the meaning and the, is important. Yeah, it's like, you know, the Wizard of Oz or something. You go and you go down the Yellow Brick Road and you got to find out what's making this whole thing, you know. And it does turn out to be a little guy, like in my case, you know, with bald and... He's not that cool and powerful, you know? But this content comes from somewhere, yeah? It's very repetitive, first of all, right? A lot of it's very repetitive. That's why we're identified with it, because some of the same content is coming up again and again. And we're like, oh, this is who I am, because I keep thinking these thoughts, yeah. We're pretty identified with that content. Especially some of the really negative content, the beliefs about ourselves, these kind of deep core beliefs about, and it's just interesting, you know, talking with you all during interviews and just hearing how universal it is, this stuff about how not good enough we are, or how not enough we are, how we don't work hard enough, or there's something wrong with me. So common. So common as to be, I'd say, nearly universal. Yeah. There's other content, you know, sometimes I'm the greatest in the world. And sometimes we have both, you know. Sometimes we're the worst, and sometimes we're the greatest in the world. Nobody is as, yeah. But some of this negative content particularly, got started really young. Yeah. And we're used to it, and we believe it. Yeah. They're just thoughts, that's true. But we really believe them. So they're extremely powerful. You know? One of the things, as you're sitting, maybe you've gotten a taste of this. I mean, you get a sense of this in a long retreat, but you get a sense of this in a short retreat too. It's just like, you know, thoughts are like nothing. They're so ephemeral. They're so insubstantial. There's no substance to them. Yeah. And when you're, they can just be like bloop, bloop, come and go. And how is it that something so insubstantial can be so powerful? So powerful as to completely change our whole state of being in a moment. You're walking along, you're fine. You're enjoying the day. You're at Spirit Rock, it's wonderful. And then you have some thought. And it ruins your day. Yeah? Totally. That's amazing. It's just this little thing. But it's like we believe it. And when we believe it, it's as if it were true. Yeah. And so it's so interesting to notice, you know, it's like, I forget who was saying something about wrapping an eye around it. We identify with it as me. Yeah, me. This is me. And in that moment, it's like we're born. Yeah, we're born into an identity, a limited identity. You're hanging out with some people, you know, you're talking to them, and all of a sudden you think, ah, I'm not on the same level as these people. I'm not smart enough, or whatever it is. And you were fine, and all of a sudden, you have that thought, you believe it, and it's like, I experienced it almost like being born, I'm in a new body. I have a different body. It's amazing. It's like a different incarnation. And all of a sudden, I'm not funny. You know, I'm not smart. I don't know what to say. I'm kind of stumbling over my words. I'm a different person. I'm a new person. And I have to live out that identity until it's over. It dies. And then something else happens. Yeah. But it's a painful incarnation. Yeah. You could think of this as what the Buddha was talking about when he talked about rebirth. We're actually being reborn over and over again in these different identities, moment after moment, based on what thought, feeling, emotion we are identified with as me. And it's interesting when the Buddha is talking about birth and the cycle of suffering, he says, talks about, you know, what's birth the cause of? Old age, sickness, death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, distress, and despair. You know, oh, you know, these limited identities. You know, notice I'm saying limited identity. Yeah, because you're in another identity. 10 minutes later, you're with some people who think you're great. They like you. You know they do. And you're funny, you're outgoing, whatever, you know, you can express yourself, you feel like you're yourself. Okay, different incarnation. Part of what's so beautiful about a retreat is we're actually paying attention to this process. It's happening all the time, but we don't notice it. Yeah, that's delusion. And one of the great things about a retreat is we get to see how this happens again and again. I mean, think about how many incarnations you've had today. Or like in the past 5 minutes, you know? But really, like, you know, Dory talked about the good meditator, the bad meditator. I mean, that's fluctuating all day long, right? It's different. Over and over and over again. One of the beautiful things about seeing this, yeah, is that we stop believing in its ultimate truth when we're in it. Yeah? Because when you're in that limited identity, one of the characteristics of it is that it feels like this is who I am. But when you've had 100 conscious incarnations in a day, you start to get skeptical. How is it, yeah, that I was this in the morning and this in the afternoon? Yeah. That's a good skepticism. Yeah. And it's based on experience, an experiential knowing. Somebody could tell you that, but it won't do you any good. So this is what's beautiful about suffering through these different incarnations. Some of them are not suffering. Some of them you're not suffering. You're really digging it. But the great thing about being conscious in all of it is that it's happening anyway all the time. Why not be there for it and learn? Yeah. Then our sense of who we are starts to get a little bigger. I'm a moth. It's interesting to notice what happens when we notice a thought and we don't take birth. Or a feeling and we don't take birth. And I'm not saying try not to take birth. Keep our instruction is always just to be with what's happening. Yeah. But as you're practicing, every once in a while, you'll notice a thought. And this takes some practice, too. Actually, let me say something else first. So how do we stop believing these thoughts? That's important. Because we really believe them so much that when we think it, immediately we get a new body. Yeah, you feel it in the body. That's why it feels so real. Yeah, it's really real. Experientially, even though what's actually happening in terms of the cause is so nothing. So aside from noticing these births over and over again and starting to get skeptical of the fact that we really are that when we're in it, you know, for me, one thing was being awkward, feeling awkward. I used to hate that feeling. You know, you're with people and you kind of feel awkward, and you're like, I couldn't stand it. And I'd always try to do whatever I could to not feel awkward. And it's such a liberating thing to have kind of, to now, not all the time, but a lot of the time with this one, feel awkward and be okay with it. It's like, yep, feeling pretty awkward right now. Yeah. Not looking that cool, whatever it is, right? It's great, you know, not to have to make it go away. You know, it's one of the great things about getting comfortable in these different states, you know, living through them, living them out. You know, you know it's not forever. I know I'm not just an awkward loser. That's the way it used to go. You're an awkward loser. It's like, oh, okay, awkward. Yep. And then it passed, you know, it's over. I know that's going to happen. And it's like that with all of these states that we're experiencing, you know, however dark they are. And it's not ultimate. They're not who we are. Ultimately, they come and they go. Yeah. If we're not paying attention, we don't notice that they come and go. we actually don't know it. So paying attention, sustained attention, we get to see the way things are. It's this coming and going. Oh, yeah. I know it's not forever. I'm in it now, right? Or this sucks, but okay. It's got a very different flavor than this is for forever and I'm doomed. So how do we stop believing in the thinking? One of the phrases kind of that came to my mind after that first retreat was, this is like watching a bad B movie over and over and over again. You know, so actually, I think there was some real wisdom in that, is that, yeah, that's true. And one of the interesting things about going to a movie, right? Say you go to a movie, like a thriller or something, you feel it the first time you go, you know? You don't know what's going to happen. You know, the girl is there and the guy with the knife is coming around the corner and you're like, ah! You know, and then you're jumping around and you're grabbing the seat and you're, you know, you're sweating or whatever it is. You know, you're experiencing it because it's really new. You know, it's very realistic. That's why we go. It wouldn't be entertaining if it wasn't realistic. Yeah. But imagine if you went to that movie 5 times and you actually watched it each time. Imagine if you went to it 50 times. Yeah? I mean, you could tell the whole movie. You know, it's like, okay, and then the guy comes around the corner and the guy stabs with the knife and then so-and-so runs out and saves the day. And, you know, you don't get excited. You're not getting so scared, right? I imagine that after the 50th or the 60th time, you'd start looking around the theater to see if anything else interesting is happening, you know? Maybe throwing popcorn at the guy in front of you, like, let's see if we can get a rise out of him, you know? It's anything, you know? It might even occur to you, you know what? I don't have to sit here. Why don't I just take off? There might be something happening outside the theater. Yeah, that's novel. You know, and at some point, maybe you're walking by the theater and you see what's playing, and you're like, I've seen that one already. About 150 times. I think I'll do something else. You know? The interesting thing about these thoughts is it's like we're seeing it the first time every time. Because somehow we're not really watching it. Yeah? I don't know exactly how that works, but it seems to be the case. If we really watch it, we kind of get to know it in the same way as the movie. It starts to lose some of that excitement. So that's what we're doing here. We're going to the movies. And it's the same thing playing a lot. Yeah, and we're watching it again and again. And sometimes we're getting kind of tired of it. But that's a good thing. Yeah. Why are we doing that? Can you sense the space in that? There's one thing is being locked in the theater. Can you sense the space in like knowing what's playing or getting up, being able to leave the theater or throwing popcorn? There's a kind of freedom in there. Yeah. In another way, I think we were talking at dinner about going off the tracks. It was just a little jokey conversation. I know we're not supposed to have joking conversations during a retreat. We only did this once. You know, going off the tracks, it's like there are tracks in our mind. They're like well-worn tracks. You know, if you're driving a car anywhere near well-worn tracks, you know, the wheels tend to go in the tracks, and then it's like you just kind of go straight. It's a little hard to get out. Yeah. So part of what's useful also is that we're seeing the tracks in the mind, some pretty well-worn tracks. And when we're on the tracks all the time, we think that's the world. Yeah? The world is the world we can see from the tracks. And the tracks are us. So I am the tracks. Yeah? This is who I am. And it seems like the same scenery a lot because we're really identified with the content. So it's very interesting. When we see the tracks, if you see the tracks, what is there also? There's also stuff that's not the tracks, space around it, like in the movie theater. The theater's there, but when you're watching the movie, you don't notice it. You don't notice there's like interesting looking people sitting near you. And I remember when I was, like when I first came to practice, and I felt pretty open at that time, I was starting to see some of this stuff after a little while of practicing, you know, starting to see it. And I was visiting my parents. I was in college. I was visiting my parents, and I took the dog for a walk in these fields nearby, and I was walking the dog along the path through these fields, and I realized, you know, I always walk along the same path, in the same direction. For some reason, I saw that. I've been doing that for years. And then I was like, just in a moment of kind of like feeling creative, I started walking all around, like in weird shapes, just kind of, and it was amazing. It was amazing. I felt so free. Something so little, so free, so free. I feel like I could go anywhere. And I realized my mind had been like this track, and it was just, my mind was in that groove. As soon as I walked off it, all this space available, new things, new content. It looked good at the time. What time is it? Let's see. So, one of the things that also came up was this thing about, I'm not sure how this is connected. It might be. It might not be. One of the things that came up in some of the conversation was about this letting go, you know, which I think Deborah spoke very beautifully about last night, the letting go. And, like, I'm trying to let go. How do I, like, let go, you know? I'm trying to let go of trying to meditate. You know, it gets kind of confusing. And sometimes the way I think about this is like, this little version of me, you know, that I'm kind of talking about, that when I'm not seeing that, see, that can be there, all those petty thoughts and stuff. You know, it's not that they go away necessarily. It's that there's all this space around them in better moments, yeah? And so it's not that that's gone. It's just like, oh, okay, yeah, and all of this. Can you get a feel for that, even just as I'm... It's like, yeah, that's there, and this. So it's almost like there's this little part, and I can be in that little part. You know, I can be the little Will. He does things certain ways, you know. Everything's kind of a struggle, and he's trying hard, and he's doing good or not, you know, but he really is, and he likes to meditate too, you know, and he likes to really try hard, you know, and he likes to let go. He likes to try to let go, you know, but he doesn't know how to do any of that stuff because that's just what his, that's his mode, you know, like... And believe me, I've done a lot of that, so I know him really well. Yeah, that's all he knows. So I don't, I, you know, it's like when I'm meditating from that, I know how it's going to go. Good luck. You know, I still do it sometimes because sometimes I'm feeling like that. I'm in that little, you know, you know? And certain circumstances bring that on. And in knowing that, I know, okay, I also know there are these other versions, yeah, other dimensions. So that can be there, and I can say, okay, what else? Yeah, sometimes I can. So that's just a good thing to check for when you're practicing. And we all have different versions of that identity. Yeah, whatever that is. And, you know, may have their own personalities or whatever. Mine kind of goes like this, you know. A lot of struggling. But whatever your version is, and you can pay attention to that. And so that's something to check out. Oh, when is that the meditator? You know, so we're looking at the meditator in a way. Who's meditating? Oh, that energy is meditating. And just noticing that there's some space around it, that's a track. Yeah. And how does letting go happen? Well, for me, I don't know how it happens for other people, but for me, I tend not to let go voluntarily. I don't think I really know how. Most of the time. I've noticed that. I hang on until I'm forced to let go, generally. You know, you may have noticed that during, you know, the day when you're, you know, wrapped up in something. You're so wrapped up that it's like unbearable, and finally you let go because you just can't take it anymore. You know, you're just like, fine, I give up. You know, you give up trying or whatever to be the, to do it right. And then all of a sudden, like, oh, okay. Wow, there's some space all of a sudden. And Deborah was speaking about this. Yeah. But one of the great things, again, about paying attention like we're doing, sustaining attention, is that we feel the pain of things. We feel the pain of holding on. We feel the pain of identifying. We feel the pain of being this little me, struggling to be good enough or the best or whatever it is. The pain of that, that's important. It's that pain that leads to letting go, softening, because it's painful. When we don't notice the pain of it, we're still suffering. But we just keep doing it because we're not getting the feedback, you know? The suffering is the feedback. It's a gift. But we don't usually notice the feedback, so we keep doing it. So this burn, this suffering, feeling the dukkha, the suffering, is important. We have a natural intelligence. This is a belief I have, and it's also something that feels based on experience to me. We have a natural intelligence that when we allow it to, naturally moves towards freedom, naturally moves towards letting go of suffering. But it needs something. It needs input. It needs to feel the pain. So in the traditional teaching, sometimes it's talked about like holding on to a hot coal. You don't have to think about, you don't have to decide to let go of a hot coal, right? It just burns and your body knows to let go. Yeah. Letting go is just like natural intelligence. So feeling the burn of being, the pain of being in the limited identity of trying and all that stuff is great. Yeah. Of identifying with a thought and a feeling, whatever it is, that identification and the pain that comes with it, feel it. There's a natural. So now when I'm in that little me, and I'm still in it a fair amount, yeah, but I feel the pain. And there's a movement then to letting go. I don't do it. You know, I don't know how it happens. Just because of being there, it happens. So, I got a quote from Hamlet here. It's a good one too. But it's not related to anything I'm saying. So I just feel really privileged to be here with you, and also just moved, really, by what you're doing. I just think it's so important, and brave of you. And I think we see the effects of living from these limited identities, you know, all over the place. Just in personal suffering and also harm in the world and to each other. To the environment. So this, you know, the limits of our identity when we start to, you know, we're looking and we're seeing what we're not, yeah? We're not just this limited. That opening into what we are, I don't know where that ends. That's very, very vast, seems to be. Maybe we can just, maybe I'll end there. Let's just sit for a moment. And may the merits of our practice and our collective intention and our willingness to be with things as they are, willingness to see things as they are, not as we want them to be or imagine them to be or think they should be. May this serve for the welfare and the benefit of all beings everywhere. May all beings be happy. May all beings be free. May all beings be happy and free. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.